This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A new legislative session opens Wednesday, setting the New Hampshire policy agenda for the next 2 years. Item number one in this first year of the biennium is always the budget, and it's safe to say this will be another tight one. Late last fall, Governor Hassan told department heads to cut back by almost $20 million. But crunching budget numbers won't be the only focus at the State House. Bills have been filed on all kinds of issues, from repeal of a new law banning handheld cell phone use while driving to enhanced privacy protections from commercial and government drones. Today in The Exchange, we kick off the new year with a roundtable of State House leaders. We'll hear their hopes for the new session, and let's hear from you, too. In addition to the budget, what should be item number one for the legislature this year? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have four guests in studio. Jeb Bradley is here, Republican Senate Majority Leader. He's from Wolfboro. Senator Bradley, good to see you. Happy New Year, and thanks for your time.
Good morning.
Also with us, Gene Chandler, Republican House Deputy Speaker from Bartlett, and Representative Chandler, thanks for making the trip. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also with us, Jeff Woodburn, Democratic Senate Minority Leader from Dalton. Also a trip. Jeff Woodburn, thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Steve Shurtleff is also with us, Democratic House Minority Leader from Penacook. And Representative Shurtleff, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Well, I want to start with you, Representative Chandler. New year, new political makeup at the State House, especially the House. Republicans took control of the House again in the last election, although not by the supermajority that they had after the 2010 elections. How does the agenda change, Representative Chandler, now that you're in charge of both houses?
Well, I'm not in charge, but Republicans are. Obviously, the biggest issue, and probably first, second, third, and I don't know how far down the line, is the budget, of course, which is overshadows everything else we'll do this session. And I think that there are some different Republican priorities which will be put forth in the budget. And, of course, the interesting dynamic is the governor is of the other party. So it's going to be an interesting scenario to try to get the House, the Senate, and the governor on board with something. It'll happen one way or the other. Something will come out of it. But how that's going to all work, it's certainly going to be an adventure, I guess I would say. But I think, you know, there'll be some different lately, as you know, the House and Senate, or the House especially, has switched back and forth here in the last 10 years, three or four different times. So, you know, we pass some bills in one session with one party, and then there's a whole bunch of repeal bills the next session to do away with some of them, and then we go on from there. So I have not seen all the bills yet. I really haven't seen very many of them, unfortunately, but
The last I checked, there are at least 800. So,
right,
yeah.
To assign them to take a look at them. So I'm not sure what's going to be in front of us. I'm sure there'll be the old standbys, too. You know, so the gambling issue will be for us. And as you mentioned, cell phones. And I'm sure we'll have a number of gun bills and et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be interesting.
So the budget, obviously, priority number one. But then given the political switches that we see back and forth, Representative Chandler, we might see repeal of some legislation that was just passed under the Democratic House.
Oh, I'm sure there are a number of repeal bills in there. I don't have any specifics. I'm sorry, but they'll be coming out shortly. But I'm guessing there will be, yes. Yep.
How does the agenda change or the tone change, Senator Bradley, now that Republicans have the keys to both the House and the Senate?
Well, I think Representative Chandler is right. It is still divided government, with Governor Hassan being a Democrat. I think All 424 of us are going to have to, you know, work together to do what's right for the state of New Hampshire. And Gene's right. The budget will be the top priority, but sort of a corollary to the budget is how do we improve the business climate? And I think that, you know, while we're fortunate we have a relatively low unemployment rate, job growth has been rather paltry, and people are working longer and harder to stay in place. And so I think that we need to have a top-to-bottom look at how high our business taxes are, workers' compensation costs, energy costs, healthcare costs, all those cost factors that over the last few years have made New Hampshire less competitive. To me, that is right up there with the budget as a absolute top priority. And if we only focused on those two things and were successful in those two things, it would be a great legislative session. There should be some bipartisan ability to cooperate.
All right. Let's turn to the Democrats on the panel. Steve Shurtleff, you have said that switching from majority to minority status means moving from offense to defense for your party. What does that mean?
Well, I think now that we are the minority party in the New Hampshire House, we're not looking so much for legislation that we will push for enactment, but instead we'll be looking to make sure and to safeguard legislation that we've passed in previous sessions. Being cognizant of any attempts to change our domestic violence laws, to weaken them, and several other bills that we've passed that we think are good for the people in New Hampshire and should stay on the books.
Can you give us a couple more examples?
Well, I think our stalking laws, any attempt to deny a woman her right of choice under Roe v. Wade. I think some of our motor vehicle laws. I think the cell phone bill is a good example of legislation that actually saves lives, and one that we do not want to see repealed.
Yeah, and that was one that just was supposed to go into effect this year, July or June of this year.
That's correct.
All right. And how about you, Senator Woodburn? How does this shift? Now, you were in the minority. Democrats were in the minority in the Senate last time around, too. But how does this change in the House affect the business that you do as a Democrat in the Senate?
Well, first, I look forward to working with the governor, setting the agenda and the legislature. The previous session was a historic session in the sense that we came together on some very important issues. We did what the people wanted. They sent us down to get solve problems, and we did it in a bipartisan fashion. The number one priority is keeping that spirit of compromise. And it's difficult in the environment that's been created in the House with Bill O'Brien and some of the extreme members of the Republican Party who have, you know, have taken all the attention and really, unfortunately, has given New Hampshire a black eye. But hopefully we can get beyond that and get to work. But, you know, we need to build a budget like we did last time. I hope, and here's my New Year's resolution, 100% Senate vote on a budget. That would be a budget that we could all be proud of. That's what we did last time. That would be number one. Number two is we need to keep Medicaid expansion. We need to keep that investment. As Senator Bradley noted on the floor, it's a tax on every citizen of $400 million that we can't turn our backs on those people, and we can't turn our backs on our economy and do that. We also need to focus on the gas tax, a real pro-business development opportunity. This is working. This is the best investment we've made since the GI Bill.
All right. Well, a couple things to pick up there for sure. The gas tax, Medicaid, I'm very interested in hearing what the rest of you have to say about that. But since you mentioned it, Senator Woodburn, I do want to ask you, Representative Chandler, about this leadership question in the House. Sean Jasper is the House Speaker. Jack Flanagan is his majority leader. But former Speaker Bill O'Brien and those loyal to him are not happy. Can you just tell us what is supposed to happen on this leadership question and when it might be settled?
Well, I'm not sure. The question of when it will be settled, I think, is a pretty big question. I'm not sure. I wished it would be settled. I wished, as a Republican, we could just get together and move along. We've had the elections, whether you agree with them or not. We had them, and we have elected a speaker. The issue is with some of the folks about whether or not Speaker Jasper represents all of the Republicans. Well, no speaker represents all of them ever anyway, but nonetheless, so there's a question of whether the Republicans should elect their majority leader. I don't know. There is no specific vote scheduled to do that. Could happen on Wednesday as an amendment to the rules. That effort could be made. I kind of expect it will. I would be surprised if it wasn't, if an effort wasn't made by those folks to do that. I do not support that. I wouldn't support it under any circumstances. I have never. The idea has been kicking around for, well, back when I was Speaker, it was brought to me that we should do that. And I fully support the Speaker appointing the Majority Leader. And the Speaker also appoints the Minority Leader. I mean, that, some people don't realize that, but the Minority Party can have their own caucus and elect who they'd like to have, but it's the Speaker that makes the official appointment to that. And that's the way it should be. And it's always been that way, except for one time under Speaker O'Brien when the Republicans did elect their Majority Leader. That didn't work out the very best, I should say. And in the end, when that person was to be replaced, there wasn't another election. Speaker O'Brien just appointed the next Majority Leader to take that person's place. So I'm hopeful we stick with the tradition. And
the tradition is, again, the House Speaker gets to appoint his or her Majority Leader.
And also, as I said, most as and importantly, the Democrat Minority Leader.
Which is you, Representative Shurtleff. Yeah.
I just want to add, you know, we've talked a lot and heard a lot about the election of Sean Jasper, a Speaker, and I just want to mention my pride in the House Democratic Caucus in that vote. We as Democrats realized for 2016 the best thing for us would be to have Bill O'Brien in the Speaker's chair because he is so controversial. But the House Democratic Caucus, as we promised to do, did what we felt was best for the people of New Hampshire, and that was electing Sean Jasper.
So. Even though politically it would have made Bill O'Brien as a good talking point for
absolutely,
you guys.
Absolutely. So I think the caucus really stepped up, did the right thing. We know that Speaker Jasper is a conservative Republican. We disagree on a lot of things, but we know that he has respect for the institution and the integrity, and that's what mattered to us.
Okay, and Senator Bradley, you're probably hoping, I hope Laura doesn't ask me this because I'm in the Senate, I'm not involved in this, but I have to get your take on this too. Even though you are in the Senate, this turmoil in the Republican Party does affect the state Republican Party.
You know, it's interesting, Laura. I go back a long time serving in both the Senate and the House, U.S. House, and I remember my first orientation, and there were three things that we were told, and I think they bear repeating once in a while. You should always figure out how to disagree with somebody in an agreeable fashion. You should always remember that today's adversary is tomorrow's ally, potentially. And once all 424 people are elected, it's time to check your ego at the door and to work together to try to do what's best for the state of New Hampshire. I have to take that medicine probably just about every day, and I think all 424 of us need to take that medicine once in a while.
All right. Well, we will talk about the work of the people, the work of the legislature. I'll let you jump into Senator Woodburn in just a moment.
Last night I read the news. There was a very troubling report that former Speaker O'Brien came out in saying that Representative Abramson, a convicted felon, should not be removed from the committee and should not be removed from the House. And I think the history of our legislature has been taking responsibility and doing what's best for the institution, and that's not what's happening today.
All right. We will talk about what you all think would be best for the state, for the institution, in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with state lawmakers about the new year at the New Hampshire House and Senate, what we might expect in 2015 from the legislature. Give us a call. We want to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Jeb Bradley. He's a Republican Senate Majority Leader. Jeff Woodburn, Democratic Senate Minority Leader. Also, Gene Chandler, Republican House Deputy Speaker, and Democrat Steve Shurtleff, he's the House Minority Leader. One more time, that exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. And all of you, very quickly, let's talk about the state budget. Now, it sounds bureaucratic. Why is this important for everybody in the Granite State, Senator Bradley? Again, it sounds like sort of a inside the Beltway conversation, but it's not.
Well, no. I mean, the budget is always a reflection of the priorities of the legislature and the governor, the spending levels, the taxation levels, where you invest, where you maybe make cuts. And so one of the things that to me is a very important criteria in the budget is what do we do about our very high business taxes? They're clearly a disincentive to locating in New Hampshire. What do we do about the fact that even though to great fanfare last year we doubled the research and development tax credit, it's still falling way short from what the business community needs. What do we do about high energy costs? That's not part of the budget, but business taxes clearly are. I think we need to show some progress that New Hampshire is competitive in terms of being able to attract people here. And we need to do it in such a way that protects taxpayers, hardworking New Hampshire families, and we need to meet the needs of the state of New Hampshire. We did that last time with a small increase from the reset that happened in the 2011 budget. And I suspect that if revenues continue to improve a little bit, and I think we're going to get good news today on December revenues, we may well be able to, you know, continue to do that. But we're going to have a pretty conservative budget that protects taxpayers when all said and done, I think.
What about that, Senator Woodburn, lowering business taxes?
Well, I think that's something that, we all need to work together on. I certainly am interested and want to work. Our focus is obviously the preservation of what we did. Very conservative, preserve what we did last time. In terms of the Democratic agenda, we're going to focus on jobs and trying to raise wages. We've had a stagnant wages, and that's been a real crisis in our country and in New Hampshire. And the only way you do that is by working with both sides, working with business, because business is the creator of jobs. And we need to pass a minimum wage, and we need to work together to find some solutions that will target those tax cuts and other business benefits that will get them focused on creating jobs and raising the wages of the current jobs. That's the focus.
If I could ask you also, Representative Chandler, about the gas tax, and we talked about this a lot last year. Do you think that there will be efforts to repeal the gas tax increase? Senator Woodburn has said he really wants to hold on to that gas tax.
I expect there will. Once again, I haven't seen it yet. I heard a lot of talk about it. I would be surprised if someone didn't file a bill to repeal it. I'm not sure what will happen to that. You know, once again, we had the battle, and, you know, that's what happened. So it's always very difficult when you have set a priority like that in one session, then try to undo it in the next session. It would cause, well, anything is solvable, but it would create a lot of problems if that revenue stream were taken away from the Department of Transportation now, certainly. So I just am not sure the fate of what would happen on the gas tax bill. But.
I remember the last budget cycle, Governor Hassan, and to some extent the House and Senate as well, said big priorities were restoring money to the university system and also strengthening the state's mental health system, especially given this lawsuit that was settled and so forth. What would you say, Representative Chandler, and I want to hear from everybody, your top one or two budget priorities would be?
Well, I think overall, the first thing, and I have to put in this plug, is we need to be very cognizant of what our revenue is going to be. That's the first thing that has to be established. And as Republicans, that, and I hopefully Democrats also will agree, that is the primary goal, to establish what I consider to be conservative and legitimate revenue estimates and then build a budget after that, because that's just – we have to do that. If we can't go down the road of just saying, okay, this is what we need to get for money and this is what we want to spend, so now let's hope we get these revenues. So that's the first thing. And then secondly, we just need to look at all the priorities based on how much money those revenue estimates say. So I don't have a particular area, because I think if you start doing that, you run into a problem. If we say, okay, we're going to fund the university system with this much money, that means someone else isn't going to get as much. And so I think that's why the whole thing, it is critical to look at it as a whole, but most importantly, based on the amount of revenues that we will expect.
Representative Shurtleff.
Well, as Senator Woodburn alluded to, the last budget was passed 24-0 by the Senate, and I think all but 35 House members voted for that budget. So looking at the makeup of the finance committees in both bodies, the expertise there, I think they're going to work out a good budget for us to vote on. It's not unlike a family's budget where you look at your wants and you look at your needs and you take care of the needs first and then look to your wants. We talked about educational funding. We know it got cut 48% under the O'Brien speakership during that 2010 term. But to us, funding of the university system is a pro-business initiative. We know there's a brain drain. Many of our young people are fleeing from New Hampshire to other states because education is cheaper. We've got to keep our young people in New Hampshire and in the New Hampshire workforce.
So higher ed would be a priority for you in terms of spending. And, you know, Senator Bradley, I did want to ask you, you talked about lowering business taxes. You also do hear from businesses, though, that, you know, when they come into a state, the quality of the labor force is perhaps their most important priority, or at least way up there. So I wonder what you think about that balance of cutting business taxes but also investing in higher ed.
No question. And, you know, Senator Andy Sanborn has a pretty interesting proposal that would turn the state funding to the university system and the community college system into what's more like a Pell Grant, which is direct aid to the student, him or herself. I think there may well be a lot of merit to a proposal like that. You know, we'll see where it goes after public hearings. So, you know, we support higher education in the Republican Party. There is no question about that. But we also support accountability. And I think there has to be an examination of why tuition increases keep going up the way they do. And so this proposal to turn funding into more of an individual grant gives accountability to the student, him or herself.
Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join our panel of lawmakers about what you hope to see happen at the State House this year, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. It's your chance to talk to State House leaders about what you would like them to accomplish this year. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from Christopher in Manchester. He says, with New Hampshire's less than stellar recovery from the Great Recession, vis-a-vis our neighboring states, many civic and business leaders in the southern tier have called upon serious movement in bringing passenger rail to Nashua, Manchester, and perhaps Concord. Christopher says, isn't it time to finally move forward on this initiative? Christopher, thanks for the question. Jeff Woodburn, I'll throw that to you first.
Sure. I think this illustrates there's an ideological and a practical way to solve problems. And I think, unfortunately, in part because of the Bill O'Brien great influence, is the Republicans chosen an ideological approach. If you talk to business people, how do we attract young people? How do we attract new jobs to the state? We're going to have to be a tolerant place. We're going to have to accept things like commuter rail and things, invest in our education and invest in things that will produce results. And I just want to say one thing, because I have this love affair with our gas tax, is in the biggest investment in the North Country, the Balsams, and you're all familiar with that, it's going to close to Grand Hotel. They came to the state and asked for a $3 million investment to do the roads around the Balsams. In exchange, they are working on an investment of $100 million, $3 million for $100 million, and then we'll hire 1,000 people. And that's why I said that's the best investment we can make. If we want to help business, we need to focus on things that matter to them, not that matter to the right-wing ideology. Things like Medicaid expansion, which keeps the low health insurance costs, and infrastructure improvements that makes business work. And I would challenge anybody to come up with an example where the gas tax is hurting. Today, the gas is low as it's been in a long time, and it's succeeding, and we're making important improvements.
Well, and I definitely want to talk about Medicaid expansion. I know we've touched on that before, and it's a big, big question. But to you, real quickly, Representative Chandler, the gas tax, first of all, I know that you were not thrilled with it last time. Sounds like, given your last answer, that, you know, right now you're okay with it. Let's move on. Is that correct or not?
I'm not necessarily
not
okay
necessarily.
With it. I just pointed out that it did happen. It
yep.
did pass. And to try to change that now would create a number of problems, obviously, with projects that have been put in line for the Department of Transportation just doesn't all of a sudden say, okay, this is what we're going to do this year. They have to plan way out based on the amount of money that they see coming in. And so it would be a problem. As I said, I-93 is a big priority for the state of New Hampshire. I don't want to minimize that, but I think too much of the money from the gas tax that we passed went towards the 93 project when we, the House and the Senate, the 10-year highway plan, had sent $15 million towards I-93. Obviously, the amount of money that's dedicated to it will get it done quicker, no question about that, but I think the rest of the state deserved to get some of that money. That was just my opinion. That's the biggest problem I had with it at the time.
I remember talking to you about that. The
right.
people in the far north and western parts of the state said, hey, why is so much going
towards
I-93?
I have to interrupt.
Yes.
Rural areas, the distribution of money from the gas tax overwhelmingly and disproportionately benefits rural areas. That's a fact.
What about the rail question that we got?
I certainly do not agree with
you
that.
You created it, Gene.
Yeah, that's the betterment program, which is good. But yeah. Right.
What about the rail question that we got from Christopher in Manchester?
Yeah, I do
what
not
do you think
agree.
About that?
I think we're not in a place place right now that we can afford to do that. Obviously, it can't pay for itself, so it's going to have to be subsidized. So I don't know where in the budget you're going to find the money for the subsidy. There has been no rail project that I know of anywhere that isn't subsidized by the taxpayers. And right now, that the only way to do it would be take money away from the highway program. So I see that as a non-starter, in my opinion. Nashua, perhaps, at least if there's going to be anything, rail into Nashua or something, that may make some sense. It might work. But I think the buses that we have now and doing that, the rail just doesn't take enough cars off the highway.
Let's take some calls. Christopher, thanks for the email. You can email us as well. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Put your questions there. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Jim's calling in from Salem. Hi, Jim. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, Jim.
I just wanted to follow up on some of the comments that this has been going in. But, you know, strictly the conversation seems to focus on the way to develop businesses purely by just strictly cutting taxes. You know, and in the conversation earlier, we talked about the subsidies for education. I know in my own instance, our son chose to go out of state to go to school because UNH was just prohibitively expensive, and for what he could get out of state was the better deal. Roads, you know, we get the 93 expansion, but we've got some 400 bridges that are falling down, ready to fall down on us. Infrastructure, the internet, you know, we don't have any kind of high-speed internet in this state to speak of. And so businesses, when they're looking at places, okay, I've got a place that has no real roads that need to be repaired, no high-speed internet, college kids are leaving the state, so I don't have an educated workforce. So you can give me all the taxes I want, but if I can't get what I need to create my business and support it, then why would I consider going to New Hampshire?
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Senator Bradley, I'll throw this to you first, since you were the one who opened up by saying you wanted to cut business taxes. Jim is saying, look, spend on infrastructure, spend on transportation, spend on education.
And guess what? We spend on all three of those things. The question is, are we going to live within our means? And, you know, it was interesting, just last week, another organization rated New Hampshire at the top of the list of all the states that are the most livable. We're a very livable state, and we're also a low-tax state, and we should stay that way. We live within our means. You know, there is plenty of new construction in roads. We may not fund education to the extent that some states do, but certainly a lot of money goes to UNH and the community colleges. And you know, his claim that there's no high-speed internet in New Hampshire, well, I think most people in New Hampshire have access to high-speed internet.
Thanks for that call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. I want to ask all of you about something that came up just in the last couple of days, and I'll turn to you first, Representative Shurtleff. The issue of dedicated funds and whether they will once again be raided or redirected, pick whichever verb you want. Just real quickly explain what these dedicated funds are.
Well, there are certain funds that are set aside for certain entities. I think the one people think of mostly is LCHIP. It's a wonderful program. It's done a great service in preserving land here in New Hampshire. We don't know what's going to happen because we haven't seen the governor's budget yet. But there is concern among some of taking those funds that have been dedicated for one specific purpose and using them for general revenue. As I said, we don't know what the governor is going to propose in her budget. We know we're facing fiscal shortfalls and added expenses. Nobody wants to see this money used for other than the purpose for which it was originally set aside for. But we've got to wait and see what's going to happen when she talks to us in February and brings the budget.
So LCHIP is one, the Land and Community Heritage Investment Program. Representative Chandler, I had a conversation with some folks just before the holiday about the fund that comes from liquor revenues that's supposed to go for treatment. Most of it doesn't. What are your thoughts on these dedicated funds and whether the House and Senate will be tempted to borrow from them again?
Oh, I don't think there'll be any question they'll be tempted whether they are successful or not. Well, the liquor fund, that hasn't – that I think I'm correct. Jeb may know better, but since its inception, way back when that was established 25 or 30 years ago, it's never, that money has never gone completely towards its intended purpose. So that's an issue with some folks, obviously. So it's an interesting dilemma. There are people who don't believe in dedicated funds. My position on that is, well, if you don't establish any more. But we have set them up, and people think that certain amount of money is going to those type of funds, and that probably should be where it should stay.
Yeah.
Change it if you want. That's fine. Change the fund and do something different. But so I think we have to be careful of pick the winners and losers in the dedicated fund scenario. There are a lot of them, and they need to be looked at because there are a number of dedicated funds that just aren't used. They just sit there, and not a lot of money sometimes, but still, it needs to be looked at. Certainly.
So if we keep rating these, why even have them?
Right.
What do you think, Senator Woodburn?
I think that, you know, certainly nobody wants to do this, but we live in a practical world. And I'll just give you one example, and I think everybody in the room here supported this, is that the Tri-County cap in the three northern counties essentially went bankrupt last year. And we took money from a fund, the Energy Renewable Fund, and put it into that. And it kept that program alive. And can you imagine the harm that would have occurred if we let that go bankrupt, let the buildings freeze up, let the federal money stop flowing in? That would have been a crisis. So, I mean, I think we do have to be responsible and be practical. And we also have to look at how we deal with these straitjackets of saying no fee increases, no other types of increases. The old days when I was in the legislature in the 80s, we fixed problems. We sat down, we worked together, we fixed problems. We didn't have this straitjacket where we can't address the needs of the state in a holistic way. We get into these slogans and pandering to the extreme edges, and that's part of the problem.
Are you in a straitjacket, Senator Bradley?
Now, we've heard a lot about straitjackets this morning. I remember the first thing I said, we should find ourselves disagreeing in an agreeable fashion. You know, there was a great story by Allie Morris in yesterday's Concord Monitor about the dedicated funds, and she went through some of the big ones, the liquor fund, you mentioned that, the police standards and training, the renewable energy fund, which probably got the biggest raid ever. I have a piece of legislation in that will actually take those dollars from the Renewable Energy Fund and send them back to ratepayers. I think that's a much better use for those dollars than anything else.
All right. We will talk about energy after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. A reminder that Thursday on NHPR, we'll be covering Governor Hassan's second inaugural address. Our coverage will start at 12:30, so join us for that on Thursday at 12:30, complete coverage of Governor Hassan's inauguration. Today in The Exchange, we're looking ahead to the new year at the New Hampshire State House. Four House and Senate leaders join us to talk about their top priorities for the new legislative session, which opens on Wednesday. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. What do you want to hear from your lawmakers about their top priorities for the budget and for the new session? Is it lowering taxes? Is it health care? Is it education or transportation? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Gentlemen, before we go back to our listeners, Representative Shurtleff, we really should talk about Medicaid expansion. This was a huge, huge, huge deal for the past year and a half, really, at the State House. Finally, lawmakers and the governor came up with their New Hampshire-style plan, if I could call it that, called the New Hampshire Health Protection Plan, Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. What is going to happen with this year, next year?
Well, as you know, Laura, in the bill there was a sunset provision that by 2016, if we don't remove the sunset provision, Medicaid expansion goes away. And, you know, I think all of us in this room have learned in the legislature that there are many times when Democrats and Republicans are headed to the same destination, but the route we travel may be different. And Medicaid expansion is a prime example. For those who consider themselves progressive on social issues, they say, why shouldn't we provide 50,000 people with health care? For those that are fiscally conservative, they're saying, why are we allowing people to spend 3 to 5 times more money to use an emergency room as their primary health care provider? And why are we not giving them a flu shot instead of treating them later on for pneumonia? It doesn't make sense fiscally. And those costs are passed down to ratepayers. Medicaid expansion was the product of Democrats and Republicans working together. I think we've seen the merits of the program. It's worked, and it's worked very well, especially in Senator Woodburn's area up in the North Country. And I'm hoping that probably not this year, but next year we'll remove the sunset provision.
Remove the sunset provision. What do you think, Senator Bradley?
Well, I was one of the architects of the sunset provision, and I think the sunset provision is there for a reason. It's to hold the federal government accountable for the federal promise of funds that the New Hampshire Health Protection Plan is based on. So I think I believe that we should continue with the Medicaid program that we have, but it should be done on an every 2-year basis to make sure that that federal funding is there, because if it isn't there, it clearly is not something that's affordable to New Hampshire. But I think, you know, you have to go back and why did we do it? We had among the highest health insurance costs in the nation, and it was because of uncompensated care, what Representative Shurtleff was talking about. It was a hidden tax on everybody that has private insurance. And so the business community was clamoring for relief from these high costs. And so far, the proof is in the pudding. It is working. The numbers are preliminary, but I believe that as we get more evidence, we're going to see that it is working, that there's a lid on health insurance costs increases, and that there will be the ability to move forward with an extension of another 2 years as long as the program is working as intended and the federal funding is there.
So it's not an attempt, Senator Bradley, to threaten the 30,000 people who are now getting Medicaid. It's a way, a safety valve almost, or a way to keep the federal government
at the
paying attention.
Special ed example. The federal government promised 40% funding. It's never gotten above 20% funding. We would be between the devil and the deep blue sea if suddenly the promise of federal funding were to go from 90% down to 50%, which the existing Medicaid population, that's the match
for
New Hampshire, 50%. It's simply unaffordable. So that sunset is for accountability purposes, and it's to protect taxpayers in New Hampshire.
Let's take another call. This is Greg in Merrimack. Hi, Greg. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Well, thank you. Good morning to all your guests.
Morning.
I've been going into the state prison facilities for many, many years, and I don't know if I've ever seen them worse than they are today with the shortage of correctional officers, the warehousing that goes on. Inmates go through the programs or are eligible for programs, but there's no one to put on the program. And what's one of the most disheartening things is the fact that inmates are coming into Concord, and before they came in, they weren't drug users. They come inside the walls, and there's a tremendous amount of drugs inside Concord State Prison today.
So, Greg, a call sounds like for some more programs, services, attention to the correction system. I think I heard recently, Representative Chandler, that there's some concerns not only about the issues that our caller talks about, but that the women's prison, the new women's prison in Concord, is going to be full the day it opens.
That's what they're saying. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think basically if you just compare numbers to numbers with how many people are in the women's prison system now and what the capacity of the new one is, that's true. But I think many of those folks are being programmed to go into other facilities in other places. So I'm not sure. Numbers to numbers, yes, it could be full. But I think with the programs that are going to be started in other facilities and things like that, that I believe there will be plenty of room for a while at least.
Senator Woodburn, you too, concerns about the corrections budget. We've heard these concerns from corrections officers, for example, who say they're just stressed out and overworked and they're kind of scared.
About 60% of the incarcerated men in the state of New Hampshire in my district in the two prisons, federal state as well as the county prison, and there is overcrowding. I was there this month and difficulty with staffing issues. And what the caller had said is absolutely the case. If people don't come in on drugs, they leave. We have some sentencing challenges. We've been locking way too many people up instead of trying to find a more efficient, better way. But the root of the issue is drugs. And the devil does haunt a hungry man. And until we address some of the issues of our economy, particularly low and middle income workers, and reversing the stagnant and decreasing value of an average person's working wage, we're going to see more and more of these problems.
Well, let's talk about minimum wage. And since you've brought that up a couple times, and Representative Shurtleff, I think you brought this up as well, but what are the chances, given that we have Republican control of the House and Senate, that the minimum wage will be increased?
It's going to be a difficult challenge to try to get anything passed, I think, in this legislative session. But I think as people learn the facts about how it is good for business, it's good for our economy to give people a working wage, I think it's going to make a lot of sense to a lot of people. Our minimum wage is now tied to the federal minimum wage. We have no New Hampshire minimum wage per se. I think the proposals by Representative Silley and Representative White in their bills puts us on a graduated program, which I think would be good for business and good for the working people of New Hampshire.
Graduated meaning increasing it a little bit
every
over
year.
Time. Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear from both of you on this. Senator Bradley? Increases in the minimum wage. A couple states, I think, this year increased their minimum wages around the country.
A lot of states have increased their minimum wage. Unfortunately, though, what happens in the real world when the minimum wage is increased is it's a job killer. The last time the federal minimum wage was increased, 330,000 Americans lost their job, young Americans, within 2 months. So if you want to create a job-killing environment in New Hampshire, raise the minimum wage. Now, here are the couple of facts. There are 5,000 people that work at the minimum wage, according to Federal Statistics Bureau of Labor. It's been estimated that some 2,200 of those people would lose their job if it went to $9 an hour. So who are we trying to serve here? The important thing is to improve the overall economy so that everybody has more opportunity. And when the economy is growing, employers have to pay more than the minimum wage in order to retain employees. And that's what we need to focus on, as opposed to something that's going to undermine our ability to grow jobs.
Again,
Sounds good. But in reality, it really hurts the people it's intended to help.
Our number again is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Representative Chandler, you mentioned at the outset that gun legislation is likely to come up this year, as it does every year. What are some of the themes? I know nobody's had a chance to look at all, 800 or 900 bills so far, but what are some of the themes that you're expecting to hear in terms of gun legislation?
Well, as I say, I haven't specifically seen any. I am sure there probably will be some regarding where you're allowed to carry a gun, for instance, in the state house or on the floor of the state house. I'm sure there'll probably be a bill in. We have a rule vote coming up which will allow members to carry a gun on the floor concealed.
Right now you can't.
Right. There will be a vote on that on Wednesday. But I expect there will be a bill filed or some bills filed to even carry that a step further so you could outwardly carry one. And then just generally going back to the what's called the Vermont system, where you don't need to have a permit to carry a gun, which one can argue one way or the other, whether it's worked in Vermont or not. So I expect there'll be two or three things like that.
And I know this is a big issue. Actually, I want to turn to Representative Shurtleff first, because this is a big issue for you with your law enforcement background.
Absolutely. And let me just say, I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I'm a licensed hunter in New Hampshire. I own firearms. Member of the Alderbrook Sportsman's Club up in Littleton. So I'm very much in support of the Second Amendment. But as Justice Holmes once said, with rights come responsibilities. And there are certain places that we just don't allow firearms, such as courtrooms, federal buildings, places like that. And I don't think that the floor of the New Hampshire House is the place where we want to have armed individuals. If there's a problem with security, let's address the problem, but let's not feel that we need to arm people.
What about broader changes in the broader society beyond this sort of guns at the state house, yes, no debate that we've been going back and forth on for a long time? But this issue that Representative Chandler raises of changing the rules around permits and who can carry and who can't.
That came up in previous legislatures, and we heard from police chiefs who told us that having the concealed weapon permit was a good thing, because a lot of times individuals who would ask for it, their family members would come into the chief and say, please don't issue it. Dad's got a problem with dementia and other issues, or maybe a problem with alcoholism, and that may not be the person to carry a concealed weapon. So I think it's a check and balance.
Okay, let's take another call if we can. And this is Kelly in New Ipswich. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi, thanks so much. I just wanted to say that there's a lot of friends of mine, and including myself, who've been out of work for a really long time. And so we're trying to start our own businesses. We're finding that the local government and the state government, and to a certain extent the federal government, really stymies us. You try to go out and rent a place in town. So you have a presence out in the community. And before you know it, you're called before. You can't just rent a place anymore, apparently. I mean, you have to go before, you know, the planning board or the selectmen and tell them what you're going to do and pay all these fees and things of that nature. Or there's, permits from the state that you have to get, fees, to register and the things of that nature. And it becomes very burdensome and very cost prohibitive for people who are just trying to get their foot in the door to even start a business.
So kind of discouraging, Kelly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that what would be helpful is if the government really just got out of our way. And instead of, I think a caller not too long ago said, forget about the tax breaks. Just get out of our way so we can start a business and then hire people and keep the money here locally instead of having to buy things, from out of state or online or whatnot.
Kelly, thank you for calling in. Real quick to you, Senator Bradley, not just the taxes, which you talked about earlier, but regulations. It's tough to even get off the ground.
Clearly,
a lot of those are local, but
she's
still
talking about a lot of local issues. But, I mean, we should have one-stop environmental permitting so that it's easier to get. We don't want to undermine environmental protection, but we don't want to make it bureaucratic either. And I'd just like to return to the Second Amendment debate that we just had for a minute. Laura, we're a safer state because we believe that people should be able to protect their lives, their liberties, and their loved ones. And the statistics bear that out. And we need to continue to protect people's constitutional
regulations,
rights.
I campaigned all fall on that. I came up 4 vote shorts in my campaign. But nonetheless, I said, we talk about the business taxes, which are important, but the regulations, I think a lot of businesses, and this is a perfect example, find the regulations more onerous than they do the taxes. If we could reduce, it's just sometimes I asked a fellow up in my hometown or one of the oil heating companies, I said, if you had your druthers, could you give me a few things you'd like to change? Well, I got 4 or 5 pages. And you read through that, and some of it is I don't think people realize the regulations that the state, the different departments just keep adding on. And that's what we really need to take a look at.
Is it the state, Representative Chandler, or is it the local governments? She mentioned the zoning.
Well, local, that's a local issue. Certainly zoning, that's a local thing. But the state puts on these regulations, and one department does one, and then another department does another, and then another part of another department does something else. And it's just very frustrating for the business owner.
Jeff Woodburn.
I want to just respond to what Senator Bradley had said in terms of the gun issue and guns being in the legislature. I mean, your studio here hotly discussed issues here, but you prohibit guns from coming in. We can't wear guns in this building. And I don't feel any safe or unsafe than I would anywhere else. So, I mean, I think that there's just progress that's made. And I think that if you look at the way these issues, this is what we're talking about. There's all these important issues about the economy, jobs, creations, and the environment and other things. And we're fighting about guns in the state house? I mean, come on. That's where the misread. The elections are not about politicians. They're about the people. And let's focus on the people's needs.
Well, and by the way, speaking of gun regulations here in our building, we are on the 6th floor of a building managed by Foxfire Management. So that's their decision.
Steve Dupree. It's banning guns.
All right. Let's see if we can grab one more caller. Mary Beth in Concord. Mary Beth, I'm going to have to ask you to make it short, but I would like to hear from you.
I'd like to see the $30 fee and on red car registrations reinstated for infrastructure. That was that means that the people who are using the roads would be actually paying for them.
Okay.
And $30 isn't a lot of money. And I understood it brought in an awful lot of cash.
Okay, Mary Beth, thank you. Representative Chandler, will this come back?
I doubt it, because unfortunately it's pretty regressive if you stop to think about it. If you're going to do one or the other, the gas tax is the fairer one, because those are the people that are really using it. If you drive 10 miles a week, you're not paying very much for the gas tax. If you drive 10 miles a week, you're paying the same, that extra $30 on your registration, as the person driving 1,000 miles a week. So for that reason, and the elderly people are affected by it, that extra, it's, like you say, $30 doesn't sound like much, but pretty soon on top of everything else. So certainly of the two, the gas tax is the fairer way to do it than the registration, no question.
Okay, and here's an email from Jerry, a Facebook comment from Jerry that I really want to get in these last few seconds. Jerry says, if a New Hampshire citizen wants to watch the legislature in action, what's the best way to do that? How do we find out about public sessions and meetings? What's the legislature's calendar over the year? Can anyone tell Jerry where to go? She wants to stay in touch with this.
Yeah, just Google the state's website, and there are links that take you right to, being able to follow both the House and the session online.
Yeah, and I spent some time actually online,
the
New Hampshire General Court
and
website.
The House sessions you can actually watch. Whatever they call that, live something. I know you can do it. I don't know how you do it.
Streaming video.
And the website is helpful. I was clicking around there myself and found out lots of information. So there you go, Jerry. Gentlemen, thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again as the session rolls out. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The producer is Ellen Grimm. Also, Faith Meixel. Our engineer is Dan Colgan, and I'm Laura Kanoy.